Last time we were talking, we were starting to talk about the different antidotes to the afflictions. And I was saying that before we get into the antidotes, we have to spend some time actually seeing the disadvantages of the afflictions. Because if we don't see the disadvantages, then we have no impetus to apply the antidotes. Okay, and then it's just become, well, I should get rid of this emotion, but actually I really like it, you know. So it's very good to spend some time thinking about the disadvantages. So last time we talked about attachment, and I asked everybody to give an example of how attachment caused, a specific example of how it caused problems in this lifetime. Yeah, so I think that's quite good to do because it gives you some real life, whoa, you know, I mean, you can see it right, very present in your own lifetime. Then, of course, to think of the disadvantages in terms of creating negative karma and causing lower rebirths, and to think that, you know, again, the kind of karma, and by reinforcing those different emotions, then it just creates more and more obscuration on the mind. So it becomes more and more difficult to generate bodhicitta, more and more difficult to realize emptiness. Yeah, and especially with the afflictions, you can see very clearly how they prevent you from, for example, generating bodhicitta. You know, if you have attachment to sentient beings, how are you going to develop bodhicitta, which wants to work for the benefit of all of them equally? Attachment doesn't let you do that. Yeah, so there's no way to generate bodhicitta when there's strong attachment in the mind, because bodhicitta has to be based on equanimity, you know, and concern for all beings, whereas attachment, you know, divides beings into, well, the ones that I like, that I want to help, and then the ones that, and then the other ones I don't care about. Okay? You can also see how attachment prevents you from generating wisdom. I mean, first of all, it takes your mind totally, you know, on a journey in, you know, in distractions. You can't develop any concentration. Yeah? And when you can't keep the mind a little bit concentrated, then, you know, you can't see the object of negation. You know, it doesn't. In fact, in attachment, your object of negation is fully present, but you don't even realize it. Yeah. Okay. So it's good to really think about these, you know. And then similarly with anger, what, you know, the disadvantages of anger. So for all of the afflictions, you have, you know, the problems that in terms of how it, they cause negative karma, which results in negative, you know, unfortunate rebirth, how they block bodhicitta, how they block, you know, wisdom. They might block in different ways. I mean, anger, you know, again, how are you going to generate bodhicitta if you have anger? Because bodhicitta is based on love and compassion, and anger is the opposite to that. Yeah? So if you're, you know, really harboring a lot of grudges and anger and defensiveness and resentment, bodhicitta is going to be hard, you know? Of course, meditating on bodhicitta could be part of your antidote to anger as well. Okay, so I'm not saying you have to get rid of the gross afflictions before you, you know, do these other meditations, because the other meditations are part of the antidote. But you can see that, you know, it's hard to generate the antidote when the affliction's really powerful. And so anger too, I think, in our lives creates a lot of problems. So like we did last time, let's go around and have everybody give a specific example. Okay, you don't need to mention the name of the person you got mad at, but a specific example, you know, or maybe it's just of, you know, resentment in general, but something specific and how it causes problems in your life. Yeah, not how it's overestimating things like that, you know, but just what, how it, you know, help make problems and suffering. Okay, so with anger, talking harshly to a loved one in the hope that that would change their behavior, it did the opposite. It resulted in then getting more angry at you, which caused you a lot of suffering. And then also the pain of feeling guilty afterwards for what you said. Okay, so anger and then again harsh speech. And then it pushed the other person away and created a real breach in the relationship that's been very difficult to mend. Yeah, so that's a problem. Yeah. Yeah, and especially if it's someone that you see frequently, then every time you walk in the same room, everybody's, you know, like, and everybody's afraid to talk to each other and all. So it's kind of similar to what she did, you know, out of anger, speaking harshly, and then somebody who wasn't an enemy became an enemy. And then, again, it's creates suspicion in your mind. Both ways, people are suspicious of each other, which means there's a lot of awkwardness in the relationship and a feeling of, awkwardness and uncomfortableness, yeah? Yeah, because you know, like, what's this person thinking about me? And so we're not relaxed, they're not relaxed.
And which affects everybody
that's also. Yeah, and it affects, especially if there's other people around, if you're in a community of friends or a group of friends. Yeah. Okay, so yours was getting angry and shutting down and completely backing away from the friend who did something that you felt was morally objectionable. And it took you 10 years to, you know, begin to see the other person's side of it. Okay, so you lost a friend and then it split the group of friends that you were both members of into different factions. Yeah. Okay, so your boss would give you lots of stuff to do. You got resentful. Like her, you backed away, shut down, put on the headphones, focused on your work, shut everybody out. And so it, you know, you were suffering and gave yourself no way to resolve your own internal suffering. And how it affected the office that you worked in, you know, because when somebody's like that, boy, it ripples through. Don't we all know? You feel it, yeah? Yeah. Okay, so having a lot of expectations of people and how they should be, getting angry when they don't do that, and then taking out on them, sometimes withdrawing, sometimes just, you know, dumping on them, and then again, it creates problems in the relationships, and you don't feel so good about it afterwards. Yeah. Okay. So a situation where you and somebody else didn't see eye to eye, you know, you had different opinions, you got angry at them, and then the painful thing for you was that you kept on going around and around in your mind about why you're right and why they're wrong, and you're spending days on this, ruminating. And when we ruminate, it's really unpleasant, isn't it? Yeah. And then also, like you said, the relationship became quite strained. Yeah. Not at all relaxed. But ruminating is very ugh, isn't it? And yet we can spend a whole lot of time doing it. The situation where you got blamed for following the rules and then because of that started speaking badly about somebody behind their back and got the whole people, all the people you worked with on your side. Oh, that was already in place. But you activated them. you reinforced the thing so that the whole school you were working in became very unpleasant to be in because there was so much anger. Yeah. So you get angry at rule breakers. Yeah. And because if people break the rules, then there's the fear of chaos. And that's quite scary. So, you know, we've got to make people adhere to the rules at all costs. And you described it in terms of withdrawing. But that's not always what you do. If I can make a comment. It's one of the things you do, withdraw. Sometimes you let the person know that they're breaking the rule and that they need to shape up, okay? And so what happens, the problem it creates, is a lot of discomfort in your own heart because the rumination, the fear that lies behind the anger, and then, of course, dealing with the people afterwards. Yeah, so it's you find it very difficult to go to the person and talk about it because the anger and the fear just block you. Yeah, so it interferes with relationships. And it, again, as you said, you know, you can cut the energy in the room with a knife. Yeah. Okay, so you would be working on a project with somebody, come back, they did something you didn't like or did it the wrong way, you would go ahead and just undo it and make it the way you wanted it, but find yourself ruminating and blaming and feeling very uncomfortable about it. And of course, the other people, may I venture that maybe they came back and saw that and got really, really angry? Maybe sometimes. Okay. Oh yeah, so you grumble. Yeah, that makes people pretty unpleasant, doesn't it? So somebody who's supposed to be assisting you and then doing what you don't consider assisting and what they may or may not consider assisting, who knows. But then the mind ruminating a lot on possible motivations for what they're doing. And yeah, that's another part of the rumination, isn't it? It isn't just rehearsing what he said, she said. It's, you know, we have to do our psychoanalysis of the other person and attribute some sort of, you know, really, you know, mentally imbalanced motivation to them doing whatever they did. Yeah, even though they may not even be aware that we're angry because they don't see a problem in what they did. But for you, one of the problems is that you don't sleep well that night. You know, because you're angry and you're ruminating and so you wake up in the middle of the night and you can't fall asleep. So you can see some similarities in what people said and also different varieties on different things. But it's really good to sit and think of the problems our own anger causes us without feeling guilty, without hating ourselves because we get angry, but seeing the anger as the enemy and the, you know, differentiating ourself and the anger. So we're not saying, I am anger, therefore I hate myself because I get angry and I'm an awful person because I get angry. Not like that, but seeing the anger as a function of the self-centered mind and knowing it's not who we are, it's not part of the nature of our mind. And so pointing a finger at it and seeing, you know, that emotion is the one who torments me. That torments me. And so I want to oppose that emotion. But it doesn't turn into self-hatred. Okay? But it's good because, you know, when we see the disadvantages of our anger, then it really motivates us to change. Yeah? And again, you know, if we're angry, it's hard to meditate on love and compassion. But of course, that's the antidote we need to meditate on, isn't it? Okay. Yeah. So why are we all more sensitive about revealing situations of anger, whereas last time, talking about our attachments, we were more open and we could laugh? Because anger is so clearly a negative emotion that we don't like admitting that we have it. And I think that's why jealousy is even harder to admit than anger, because it's even more disgusting. Yeah? So that's my idea. Yeah. But I think it's really helpful for us to be able to admit it and to talk about it, because otherwise, you know, if we're always trying to hide it, any way other people know. Yeah, so who are we hiding what from? Because we're usually the object of their anger, so we know they get angry. Yeah, but, you know, for us, it requires some amount of clarity and humility and transparency to just say, well, you know, these people know anyway, so, you know, I don't need to put up a show about being Miss Goody Two-Shoes here. Okay, so with anger, it's so clear how we hurt other people that, again, we feel shame, we feel regret, we often get angry at ourselves, yeah? And so that could be one of the reasons why it's so uncomfortable to talk about it, because we have a hard time accepting that we've behaved that way and caused that kind of pain, yeah? Which I think, in a way, you know, the fact that we have remorse about it, and this kind of shame you're talking about, that's the good kind of shame. Yeah, not the bad kind of shame, but the feeling like, gee, I could do better than this, you know, and I need to do better than this. That in itself, I think, is a virtuous mental factor. Yeah. If we got angry and we didn't feel any kind of regret or any kind of, you know, blech with our, you know, then we'd probably be a psychopath, wouldn't we? Yeah? Yeah. So our attachments we think are cute, you know, like, oh, how silly I was, you know. But the anger, you're saying, also, most of us, you know, when we were younger, got really criticized by parents, teachers, whoever it was, for our anger. So that adds a layer of saying to ourselves, you're a bad person for getting angry, and that makes it difficult to speak about the anger in front of other people, because then they're going to all know what a bad person we are. Amazing how we tie ourselves in knots, isn't it? This is all conceptuality. Yeah. We haven't accepted our anger. Yeah. So we don't have a sense of peace in ourselves. When we can accept it, it doesn't mean we continue getting angry. It means we stop shaming ourselves. We stop beating up ourselves. Yeah. And so that creates some sense of space in our mind where we can actually look at the anger and then do something about it. Whereas when we're all tied up with, you shouldn't get angry and you're a bad person, that because you get angry and everybody hates you because you're angry and they all know that you're a bad person, and blah, then there's no way for us to even deal with our anger, because there's all this other static, you know, in the mind. Okay, so it was hard for you to see the your capacity for cruelty. And even when other people tried to help you get over the anger at that friend, you refused. Yeah. Yeah, and that's why some people go through their whole lives holding these kind of grudges, their entire lives. Yeah. And it's very painful. Okay. I think we should learn also to laugh at our anger, don't you think? Yeah. Yeah, because sometimes, I mean, if we can look at the stories that lie behind our anger, the stories are really rather stupid, aren't they? Yeah, so if we could look at those stories and say they're so stupid, yeah? In seventh grade, Peter Armetta said this, therefore, all the way through the rest of junior high, high school, and into college, we were in the same classes, and I refused to speak it to him, you know. I mean, that's really dumb, isn't it? Yeah? And I can tell you the story, and a lot of people would tell you, you were right to be angry at him. You should be angry. He was prejudiced. He was biased. He was anti-Semitic. You should be angry. And then, you know, but I don't want to hold on to that. I don't want to hold on to that. No way.